Today's episode is brought to you by the Strand Tennis Center. Located just 40 minutes outside of Manhattan, the Strand is the tennis brainchild of owner Stephen Capo, and it's my favorite facility to sweat, learn, and have fun while playing tennis. Follow the Strand on Instagram or Twitter at Strand Tennis for more information. Welcome back to our little tennis family. I'm your host, John Garica. I'm joined again this week by tennis writer for thetennistribe.com and contributor to the Doubles Only Tennis Podcast, Hanlon Walsh. Hanlon, welcome back to Fantastic Tennis. We had a fun show last week. I'm so glad you're back this week.
We did. I'm excited to be back and talk a little bit more doubles and, you know, part two of the dynamic duo of Nicole and Ellen.
Yeah, I'm so excited. That's really, really cool. Can we talk about your show for a minute? Because we didn't get to talk about it last episode. I want to talk about the Doubles Only podcast for a moment. For those that haven't listened to Doubles Only before, can you talk about the premise of the show? I know you're a contributor and you work with a great team over there. Tell me all about Doubles Only.
Yeah. So Will Bocek started the podcast. He's the founder of the Tennis Tribe. He's actually one of my best friends. We played college tennis together. So we, you know, have a lot of history. It's really designed, I think it's kind of two part. It's for doubles recreational players. A lot of the episodes focus on double strategy at the 3-5 and 4-0, 4-5 level, you know, all different types of levels. So part of it is double strategy and insight for recreational players. And then the other part of it is, you know, what's happening on the pro doubles tour. And we've gotten to interview so many top WTA and ATP doubles players, coaches, media, you know, all of the above. And typically during the episodes, you know, we'll talk about their career. We'll talk about what's happening on the doubles tour, but it's always cool to hear the players offer insight for, you know, recreational doubles players who are listening to the podcast. So I think our listeners get a lot out of tips from, you know, the top pro doubles players in the world.
Yeah. Or you do too. I mean, I know we both play recreationally. We've been talking off camera just about, you know, how we like to play as well. And yeah, it's always helpful. You know, I always need help. I can always use them. So your show is always great when it comes to that stuff. Cause I'm like, oh yeah, I should be doing that.
Me too. Yeah.
For someone who hasn't listened to your show, you know, the people out there that really need those doubles tips, what are one or two episodes that they can start binging, or what are your two favorites that maybe we should jump right into?
Two of the most popular ones, I know Gigi Fernandez was really popular. I think that's been the most widely listened. Obviously, she was a, you know, doubles legend herself. I think she won 17 majors on the WTA tour when she's playing, and she runs her own academy and, you know, teaches doubles for all levels of recreational players. So I know that one was really well received. And then one of my favorite conversations was with Barbora Krejcikova and Katerina Siniakova at the WTA finals last year. And then we've also had a lot of great conversations with Nicole Melikar Martinez and Ellen Perez, who we're going to be talking about a little bit today.
Well, what a great transition for that, Hanlon. I appreciate that very much. Well, I will say your pod is on my rotation. I appreciate all the content you both put out. I mean, it's floating in my tennis universe. So
likewise,
we became friends on tennis Twitter. We're tennis Twitter brothers now.
We are.
I'm so glad you could stick around for this episode as well, because it's really a part two discussion. Like you said, we talked about on last episode, we had a great conversation about the art of doubles. We took some time to get to know the fantastic Ellen Perez. And now this week, we're getting to know her doubles partner for the past year, 2018 Wimbledon mixed doubles champion, Nicole Melikar Martinez. And Nicole's had such a great rise from 10K events. You're going to hear on this episode, you know, how she started out and very minimal junior ITF experience. And we're going to hear how she just kind of made herself a staple on the doubles tour. And a few years later, she becomes a top 10 doubles player and a Wimbledon champion. It's really great. We've both interviewed Nicole, and I'm excited to break down her fascinating rise up the rankings in a bit. I thought you did a great job chatting with her in Austin. I listened to that interview. It was really, really great during her run to the finals. What are your thoughts on Nicole after your interview and about her career in general?
I think, you know, for one, Nicole has been one of the most vocal advocates for growing doubles, and she's really bought into what we're doing at the Tennis Tribe and with the Doubles Only podcast, and has been a repeat guest on the show many times. She and Will Bocek have been, you know, messaging back and forth for several years just about ideas to grow doubles. And I think she and Gabby Dabrowski, I would say, have been two of the more vocal WTA doubles proponents. So it's great to have those players with, you know, with their big followings and their network to be able to amplify the message about doubles. And Nicole herself has been, you know, she's had so much success with multiple doubles partners. She's been, like you said, a top 10 doubles stalwart the last probably 5 or 6 years. So I think she's been really one of the most consistent WTA doubles players who has had success with a lot of partners.
Yeah, it's so great because in this episode, you're going to hear some great stories from her time on tour. She's very open and she shares so many really amazing experiences that she's had. She freely admits, actually, I thought this was very interesting. I asked her point blank, are you a double specialist? And she says, yeah, absolutely. I'm a double specialist. And I didn't know if that was a taboo term or not when it comes to players like her. We've heard a little bit, like last week when we talked about Ellen Perez. If you haven't heard the Ellen Perez episode, go back and listen to Ellen Perez, because Ellen still, week in and week out, is trying her best to play singles to really rise her ranking because she feels like she can still make it. Nicole is very comfortable playing doubles and where she is right now in her career. And I found that was a very interesting combo between the two and the conversation. And you mentioned partners. Absolutely. Nicole has had so many great partners. We're going to talk about her partnership in 2018, especially, that I found was so fantastic. And she talks how that 2018 relationship with Kvetepeska, legend from the Czech Republic, and that Rumbledon run that they had together in 2018, how that really helped her career, and how her coach, Torsten, Kveta's husband, really helped her have a coach on the tour for the first time and have that consistency that some players lack. And she had never had that before. And it really made such a difference to that 2018 season. It was really interesting to hear. There's a great story about her playing ITF tournaments with her sister Jane as well. We play trivia. She's super competitive. It's a great episode. I'm so excited that you're here joining today because I really want everyone to hear this today. Today's also our Miami Open episode. I'm a Florida boy, born and raised in Tampa, Florida, and I have so many great memories of going down to Key Biscayne when it was at this amazing site that was historic and very traditional. It's one of my favorite events of all time. It's moved venues now. James Blake has done such a great job over the years at making so many improvements. I remember going a few years ago and thinking, ugh, you know, I was like, this tournament is nothing like it used to be. And over the years, he's really kind of listened to the fan feedback. And I highly recommend going down to Miami. I know you've never been to Miami, but I know as a fan, you, I'm sure, have been paying very close attention to the Sunshine Double. We just had Indian Wells. We're out to Miami right now. Let's reminisce for a minute. Do you have a favorite Miami Open memory, Hanlon?
I think the one that comes to mind, and this is maybe a little bit recency bias, but last year, the 2022 Miami Open, when Iga, you know, this was right around the time when Ash Barty announced her retirement, and everyone, you know, any WTA fan was probably worried, you know, who's going to take the reins of number one. And Iga, not only did she, you know, inherit the number one position, but at that tournament, she really took the bull by the horns and just, you know, went on a tear. And that was the start of her incredible run last spring and summer. And I think it was really convincing and really promising to see Iga just take the pressure, you know, head on and not shy away from the pressure and expectations of being number one and really just put on a signature performance. And I think tennis fans, especially WTA fans around the world, were all really excited just to see how well Iga handled that moment.
Definitely. I mean, she showed, hey, I can dominate on clay. I can win on hard, right? I mean, Miami is, it was considered the fifth major for so many years. I mean, it is a huge tournament. It's amazing. So yes.
How many times have you been? Did you go every year growing up?
I mean, I didn't go every year, but I loved it. I mean, it was the closest tournament to me. And
yeah, it's on my bucket list for sure.
Oh, you have to. I mean, I think you should come down. I think you should come. But I mean, I remember, you know, Venus versus Kournikova. You know, I'm there for that.
That's a throwback.
Throwback. I mean, 1996, Steffi Graf versus Chanda Rubin. I mean, that was a great final in 96. My favorite memories over the years, 2001, Venus Williams beating Jennifer Capriati, third set, 7-6 in the third. You can't have a better
what a year.
Final than that, right? Come on.
That was my favorite, like those couple of years. And we talked about this a little bit off the camera, but from like 2000 to 2005 or so, just early to mid 2000s, the WTA, that was when I got hooked on tennis. And I think, you know, some of the best years of the WTA, at least as it relates to singles, just right? Venus and Serena and Capriati, Davenport. I mean, it was just stacked with so much talent.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I love the Serena Williams and Victoria Azarenka battles over the years. I mean, they're both from South Florida, so those were always kind of hometown events for them. That 2009 final with Vika and Serena, that's probably one of my favorites of all time too. So many great memories of Miami, and we're just coming off of Indian Wells.
I mean, I think on the WTA side, it's interesting to see there seems to be a solid group at the top that's really starting to break away from the pack. Not only do you have Iga, but Sabalenka, Krejcikova, Rybakina, Pegula, Gauff. Like it seems like there's kind of this group of maybe 6 to 8 players who are developing, you know, more and more consistency in this pack of core players that's kind of breaking away from the field. So I think, you know, any of those names that I just mentioned could be very likely winners in Miami, at least favorites to win. But to me, you know, Sabalenka, I think, above the rest of that group. But
yeah. And the men, what do we think in Miami? What are we thinking based on form?
I think based on form, you've got to go with either Alcaraz or Medvedev. To me, they seem like the two strongest front runners when you take, you know, Nadal and Djokovic out of the equation. However, I'm really excited to see, you know, what the American men can do in Miami. That there's just so much depth right now on both the men's and women's side. And I think we have 10 or so men in the top 50 and then 3 in the top 20 between Fritz, Tiafoe, and Paul. And all 3 of them have been playing overall a good start to the year. So I think if the draw breaks through or one of them gets an opening, it would be really fun to see an American male win Miami.
Yeah, I mean, good picks. It would be amazing, right? We always love a hometown favorite.
I'm a big Ben Shelton fan, too. I think what he's done, like, in such a short amount of time, results-wise, but also just star power and just charisma. To me, he and Francis Tiafoe, I think both just have so much potential and the type of just transcendent tennis superstar that they both could end up becoming.
Completely agree. I think we're on the same page. I mean, I think for American tennis, we have so many talented players in the universe right now. But for me, Tiafoe and Shelton are the two that really kind of stand out that I'll be cheering for in Miami. Well, two other people that I'll be cheering for in Miami, Ellen Perez last week, Nicole Melichar Martinez in doubles. I'll be there all week. If anyone out there is listening, please shoot me a message on Instagram or on Twitter. Look for the Fantastic Tennis t-shirt. I'll be there all week long. I would love to meet anybody who is out there and listening, any tennis fan. I'll buy you a drink. I'll throw you a t-shirt, whatever you need. Come on over. Come say hi to me. I'd love to meet fellow tennis fans. Hanlon, thank you so much for joining these past two episodes. Let's keep watching doubles.
Thanks. That was fun.
You can follow Hanlon on Twitter at Hanlon Walsh or on Instagram at HP Walsh. And I'm so excited that we all get to know the fantastic Nicole Melichar Martinez.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
I mean, they always have a big mouth. They always talk a lot. So it happened before, it's going to happen again.
I vividly remember the moment I became an instant lifelong tennis fan, where as a kid, I dreamt of holding the Wimbledon trophy as I watched a memorable 1990 Navratilova versus Garrison ladies singles final. Alas for me, the only thing I hold in my hand every year at Wimbledon are endless glasses of Pimm's Cup. But for my guest today, she was able to turn that dream into reality by becoming a Wimbledon champion. Born in the Czech Republic, she'd moved to the United States and grew up in Florida, where she'd hone her killer serve and crisp volley in hopes of making a run at a pro tennis career. Her rise up the rankings is the epitome of dedication and perseverance, as she'd continue to build on her success year after year. And listen to this stat. Starting with her first appearance on the WTA rankings back in 2010, she'd reach a new career high doubles ranking for 12 consecutive years on tour. And she cracked the top 10 by reaching world number 9 back in May of 2021. She's an Olympian with currently 12 WTA doubles titles, 7 Grand Slam semifinal appearances, 3 Grand Slam finals, and of course, the crown jewel of her trophy case, the 2018 Wimbledon mixed doubles title. She's one of the most consistent and coveted doubles partners in the sport of tennis today, and she's here to discuss a career that continues to thrive and reach new milestones. Our guest today is the fantastic Nicole Melichar Martinez. Nicole, welcome to Fantastic Tennis.
Thank you so much. I love the introduction. That was wonderful.
Thanks. I know. It's all you, though. I didn't do anything. I just read it. So I love that. You know, I had the easy part. You had the hard part. You had to win Wimbledon. You know, that wasn't in my cards for me. It's so great to meet you. Thank you so much for joining today. Today's our Miami Open episode, but you're in one of my very favorite cities today because you're really at the start of the Sunshine Double. You're in Indian Wells.
I am, yeah.
I went last year, actually. All my friends were there. It was the most fun. I'd never been before. It was a really, really cool event. And a huge congrats because yesterday you won your first round match. It was amazing. It was against Andreescu and Putintseva, who are two very tricky players known for their absolute crazy tennis sometimes. So well done. What's the inside scoop in Indian Wells? I want to know everything. How to go? Is it as cold as it looks as well? What's going on?
During the day, it's actually been beautiful, perfect weather. But yeah, at night, it's definitely been chilly. Last night, it seemed to be a little bit warmer, but the flowers are blooming. The mountains are beautiful in the background. I mean, it's just the perfect place. Every day, it's been very calm. And today, the breeze is slightly picking up. So I hope that's gone by tomorrow, because when it's nice and calm, it's absolutely perfect weather.
Yeah, it's always so scenic, but you know, you don't really expect the cold, the chilly nights that mm-hmm. Indian Wells can bring. It's really kind of tough. Today's your off day. You win yesterday mm-hmm. in a great match. I loved it. You guys played so well, you and your doubles partner, Ellen Perez. What's a typical off day like for you at big tournaments like this? So you play yesterday, you practice this morning, and mm-hmm. what's tonight? A big party, right? You guys are going clubbing all night, right? You'll be out till 3?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, taking tequila shots, dancing on tables.
No. Of course, that's like a Wednesday. I know. Keep going.
No, so yeah, got up early, had some breakfast. We practiced for 2 hours, even played some practice points, went into the gym, and then have the afternoon off. You know, make sure I do a good recovery session, but also want to do something fun. So we're probably going to go to the tramway and go to the top of the mountain to see the beautiful views. It's a little bit cloudy, but it's supposed to clear up and be more sunny later. So I'm really hoping we can see nice views. Definitely going to have to take a warm coat because it's in the 30s up there. But ooh. Yeah, excited to see that. I've heard it's beautiful and I've never gone.
I love it. Yes, that's a great mix. You know, you can't be all tennis because you'll go crazy otherwise. You have to do something else, right? Mm-hmm. I will say the momentum is in your favor, because another congrats is in order to you and Ellen Perez, because you made the finals in Austin at your last event. Congratulations. That must feel so good. And probably the most important question I'm going to ask you today is, did you get cowboy boots or a cowboy hat in your welcome bag in Austin, or no, you just brought them yourself?
Well, technically neither, but that's definitely a good recommendation for the tournament. They should for sure give us some cowboy boots or a cowboy hat or something. I mean, we're in Texas.
It's their first event, right? There's some momentum. And actually, pro tennis really is all about momentum, because it's this really crazy roller coaster of wins and losses. And I know you've had some very close matches this season that really could have gone either way in your favor. And I'm guessing that that final in Austin was even more important than some people can imagine for confidence and, you know, for the rest of the season.
I mean, yeah, we had several close matches in the Middle East that didn't go our way. But in, I think, a couple of the matches, we actually won more points than our opponents. So we're clearly doing a lot of the right things. And to make a final last week was really good. It helps boost the confidence. The win yesterday was really good. So as long as we're playing close matches, I think that's a good sign. It's when you're losing 2-2 or something where you should be more worried. But if they're close matches, then you just, you know, it's in the little details.
I'm a very vibey person, so I feel like good things are going to happen. You know, you're in a good place. Miami next week is a good place. So I'm feeling the good vibes are coming. So I think that's great. I'll be out there cheering you on in Miami as well. I also saw, by the way, a photo of you at Taste of Tennis the other night, which, mm-hmm. you know, Indian Wells, if you don't know Taste of Tennis, they have them at all these big tournaments, right? It's like all these chefs come in and prepare food for you. And I was thinking, of course, Nicole is there because you're a total foodie.
I am. Yeah.
I had no idea. We have to talk about food for a second before we get into your career, because I found out that you have your own TikTok account. I mean, this is so cool. I will say, you use the handle. I want everyone to go. And if you're on TikTok, go follow Nicole right now. It's wannabe_foodie. Yes, mm-hmm. I got that right.
Yes, it is.
And you recommend all these great restaurants and all these great cities that you travel to all over the world. It is so cool. I've already mapped out a spot I want to go to. You went to some crazy, strange restaurant in New Jersey. And I was like, okay, that's pretty close. I'm going to go check that out, right?
Something my husband and I like to do, we like to go to nice restaurants and experience good food. And he sees how passionate I am about food. And he was like, why don't you start your own TikTok? So lately, when we've been going to these nice restaurants, you know, making the videos of the food, showing the restaurant, and just trying to share it with other people that go to the same cities. So I haven't posted in a while. I definitely need to post. I have 3 or 4 places that I've been to that I have pending. So stay tuned. Okay, I'm going to be posting soon. But yeah, definitely he inspired me to do that. And yeah, just trying to create a following, and whoever has some good restaurant recommendations, let me know, because always looking for good, tasty food.
DM Nicole, please, after this. Well, after you start following her, which you're going to very shortly. You know, I did see on Instagram as well, you went to some cool places in Austin too. You had some barbecue. I'm hoping hoping there's some TikToks of like,
oh,
some cool. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. All right, cool. Mm-hmm. It looks really, really good. What are your typical like flavor profiles? What's your favorite kind of, are you spicy? Are you like a dessert person? Are you on the hunt for that kind of indigenous dish somewhere? Like what do you typically?
I definitely like spicy food. I can handle a good amount of spicy. I love dessert, don't get me wrong, but I feel guilty when I eat it. You tend to sneak in there at the end of meals. We're like, oh, should we get one with a bunch of spoons?
Oh, for the Instagram. Let's do the molten lava for the Instagram. Yeah. Just with...
Like last night we were at dinner. We're like, okay, one cheesecake with 9 spoons so everyone can have a bite and you don't feel as guilty. But yeah, just like to try different flavors. I really like Asian food, different Japanese and Thai, and how the flavors go together. And if there are any fusion restaurants, those are probably the best.
That's your jam. That's the Nicole Melikar Martinez jam. Is there something you absolutely won't eat? Is there like, I have weird ones, so it's okay. If you want to be vulnerable right now, you can share with your tennis family, because it's, you know, I have some very basic ones and you're like, ugh, you would judge me right now if I even gave you mine. But is there anything that you're just like, absolutely no?
I mean, I'm not a fan of mushrooms and olives.
Mushrooms, we're twins. Come on. Mushrooms is up there. That's mine.
Yeah. If I have to eat them, I will. But if I have to choose, absolutely not.
Oh, I won't. You're way nicer than me. Good job. No, I'm like, nope. No, thank you. I'm not going to eat the mushroom. Is it black and green olives? That's it. No, not happening.
Yeah, just any olives. I don't like the taste. And a funny story, one time my husband, he was like, oh, try this. And he didn't tell me what it was. And he just like gave me some food. And I was like, ew, why'd you give me an olive? And he's like, oh, so you do know what it tastes like. I swear he didn't believe me.
Love it. Yeah, no. Bananas. I play tennis. So like, that's like a terrible thing that you should eat.
Oh, you don't like bananas?
I hate banana bread. I love banana bread. What's wrong with me?
I make awesome banana nut muffins.
Okay, that I would eat gladly. Mm-hmm. I wish you could zoom it to me right now through the computer, but no, like a regular banana, get it away from my face. I don't want to. Beets, I don't know. There's a lot. This could be a whole show. We could talk about food. So another time. Does your husband cook at all? Like, obviously, I guess if he's giving you olives, he's cooking too.
Yeah, he cooks too. He does. And okay. I make sure he's actually a very good cook, but only when he tries. So if he's going to cook, I'm always like, are you going to try? And then he knows he needs to step it up because I want something tasty.
Yeah.
I'm very needy when it comes to food.
I'm totally into it. I'm very needy with cocktails. So I can make you a cocktail. Like that I can do, but food, I'd rather go somewhere, I guess. I had your doubles partner, Ellen, on the show, and we brought up food too. She loves food. She's a big foodie too. So this is like really great for me to understand both of you at this point. I asked her if there was a meal that she remembers having above all else. And you've been on tour like 12 or 13 years now. You've been traveling. Is there a restaurant or a meal that really sticks out in your mind above all while you've been on tour? Maybe not at home, maybe like something that you're like, oh, we have to go back to that restaurant, or that was like amazing, or maybe it was in Asia. I don't know.
Actually, after we won the tournament in Cleveland, we went to a really good steakhouse for dinner. That one of recent sticks out in my mind. I'm sure there's plenty of others right now. I'm a little bit in a mind block.
I know. I'm putting you on the spot. Go Cleveland. Go Cleveland in your beef. You impress Nicole. It's on your TikTok though.
Yes. Yeah. And there was like this potato cake that was crispy on the outside, but soft on the inside. And I don't know, it hit the spot.
Potato cake. Oh, all right. I'm learning so much now. We've chatted about Indian Wells. We've chatted about TikTok. Everyone go follow wannabe_foodie. We've shared our eating habits and pretty much besties at this point, since we both hate mushrooms. So we're good. But there's so much to unpack, Nicole, from your years of moving up the WTA rankings. So I've compiled the most popular topics that tennis fans want answers to. The topics today range from the beginning of your career all the way to your life today in Indian Wells. Mm-hmm. And along the way, we'll even test just how mellow far back you can remember your own career, as we'll have three Nicole Melikar Martinez quiz questions today.
Okay.
So let's jump right into today's show. We have Nicole Melikar Martinez. Let's do this. My first question always, Nicole, we always start out by this one. Let's travel back into your young tennis mind for one moment. Do you remember the very first tennis match you remember watching live or on television?
Live or on television? Live, I remember going to the Miami Open when I was, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 years old. And it wasn't the Miami Open at the time. It was the Sony Ericsson.
Yeah.
And I remember I didn't really watch that many matches. I wanted to get a photo with Murat Safin. That was like my number one goal.
Oh, he was hunky. That's why. Yeah, of course. That makes sense. It was the forehand. Yes, that's what it was. Sure.
Probably the jumping backhand. I don't know. Okay. But right. And I remember meeting Tim Henman and he asked me if I was working on my volleys.
Oh, okay. And you're like, actually, one day I'm going to win a Grand Slam. So yeah, I am.
He for sure doesn't remember, but I'll never forget it.
Have you brought that up with him? Did you tell him like later on?
No, I haven't. I've never really had the chance to chit chat with him, but I should.
You do the same thing. You have all these fans and I've seen you after matches. You're writing, you know, you're signing autographs to all these impressionable young kids that are just screaming and so excited to be at tournaments. You know, I saw you the other day. I mean, it's part of the job, which is so cool that you always take time. And every time I've ever seen you play, you always stop and you're always making sure that you acknowledge that because look, how impressionable is that? You know, Tim Henman is making a comment to you and you remember it, you know, all these years later. So who knows? Who knows who the next person out there is? You know, it's so cool. Can we talk about young Nicole growing up playing tennis? You know, I'm always just so fascinated. I know you on court, but I'm getting to know you now. What was your personality like as a young kid? You know, was it much different than you are today?
I think the competitiveness was always the same. I think I had more of a temper as a kid. I would get frustrated very easily. I still tend to get frustrated, especially on the practice court, because I am a little bit of a perfectionist. But I think I was way more emotional as kids are.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, but the competitive spirit was always there. I always wanted to win and just whoever I went and played a match against, it didn't matter if it was a tournament or practice or, you know, you want to beat them. And I think that was just the competitive drive that I had, but I'm competitive in anything. Like we'll play cards, we'll play croquet, we'll make a bet on who, you know, anything. And I try and come out on the winning side.
I love that. Same. It's just so, it's like so part of you, right? It's just something as a kid, you're judged on it. It's every week. It's about the wins and the losses. You got to stay on top. I love it. I love the competitive edge. I'm guessing you grew up in somewhat of a tennis family too, because I saw that your sister Jane is a pretty good tennis player as well. How did tennis find your way into your family? How did that happen?
Yeah, my parents play recreationally. They're like 3-5 level USTA players. So not professional or anything, but they just had the love for the sport and they were huge tennis fans. They introduced it to us from a young age. My sister is 5 years older and growing up, I just always wanted to beat her, be as good as her. And then finally, we actually played against each other in a tournament. I was 11, she was 16. And then I did beat her. And I think that was...
Is that the first time you beat your sister in a tournament?
Yeah. And I think...
Oh my gosh.
That was a little that's bit, crazy. Almost the end for her. I think that...
Well, you know why? I mean, that's traumatizing. Come on. I mean...
Yeah.
Have you talked about that later? Yeah. Did she just choke? It was just like, you know, or what? What was that moment? Was that like a...
Well, it was, I mean, to be fair, she did have a shoulder injury, so she couldn't really serve. But then after that, I mean, she was taking care of her injury. And then I ended up, you know, going to various tennis academies and I pursued my tennis career. And then she ended up going to college and becoming a nurse practitioner. So she's the brains in the family. I'm more the athlete.
I was doing research. I noticed something so interesting. And I do want to hear about this. I know now knowing that you played her at a tournament, you know, when you're young and that's the first time you beat her. Cause of course I was thinking, you know, you play with somebody who's better than you. That's great. That's how you're getting better, right? She's always been better than you. And all of a sudden, bam, you beat her. But let's go back to 2017 for 1 second, because you just reached a final at an event in Kuala Lumpur, right? You're playing some great tennis in 2017. Mm-hmm. You're progressing. You get all the way to the final. You lost to the Aussie legends, Barty and Delacqua, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're playing top level tennis in a pretty, that final was pretty tight too.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that final from Kuala Lumpur, you fly all the way to Tampa, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
My hometown, by the way, born and raised. I'm a Tampa guy.
Okay.
You played in a $15,000 challenger, right? Which I understand why. Maybe you're playing singles. I get that. Mm-hmm. But you played doubles with your sister in her only pro match, which I thought was so cool when I saw that. I want to hear everything. Was that a blast or a complete disaster?
A little bit of both. So I had to play, I think, 3 or 4 matches just to qualify in singles. And I played my first round match after qualifying. And I think we played for like 3 or 3.5 hours and I ended up winning, but I was dead. And I can't remember if we had to play that same afternoon or the next day, but I had told my sister like, hey, I'm playing this tournament. Maybe I sign us in. And if we get in, skip work and come over. And she's like, I haven't played in like a month. And I was just like, oh, it doesn't matter. We'll just have some fun. And so we ended up getting into the tournament and playing. I don't remember who we played, but they're, you know, good, obviously. And my sister hadn't played in a month and she was a little nervous. And, you know, when you're a little out of practice, it's tough, but we had fun and the score didn't go so well. But she told me, we were talking about it the other day. She's like, I want to try again. I've been practicing a lot more. And so who knows, maybe we'll pop up in a 15K or 25K again.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. That's so funny.
But we won't be the Melikar sisters anymore because she changed her last name. So,
well, you know, you have a hyphenated name too. Maybe she can just like bring it back. Maybe she can bring back the hyphenated name. That would be kind of fun.
Yeah, Melikar Hollis and Melikar Martinez.
Yeah, that's kind of iconic though. Come on, that's pretty cool. Fun. We've had sisters play. You know, you see the Pliskovas play. You know, you see the Williams play. But you know, we've never had a hyphenated sister team. Just saying.
True. Okay. Can you try and be the first? Or sisters that have 2 different last names.
All right, everyone, scroll into your databases. I know we have a lot of great tennis fans who are listening. I'm sure they know this right away. They're like, oh, it's these two. But yeah, I love it. I can't imagine playing with my sister. Not even close. I'm very competitive too. So that would never happen. So Nicole, you play in your first ITF event back in 2008. And then you really started playing full-time in 2010. Mm-hmm. So you've had a solid 13 plus years now on tour, which sounds crazy, right? Isn't that just like...
I feel old now.
I'm sorry, but like, that's crazy when you say that. Cause you know, it's like 2008, you play your first event and here we are. We're talking about your early start in tennis. I think this is a perfect time for the first of the 3 Nicole Melikar quiz questions today.
Okay.
And this is about your singles career.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, here we go. Nicole, your very first match on the ITF tour was a straight set win in qualifying at a 10K in, this isn't the question, but do you remember where it was?
At a 10K, was it in Sumter?
Close. Okay. All right. Well, no, South Lake, Texas. All right.
South Lake, Texas. Okay.
So maybe that was a good hint for today.
Oh, in the qualifying. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So here we go. So then, you know, we're back in South Lake, Texas in 2010 and you beat a player by the name of Olga Boylaicheva.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I remembered her name was Olga. I couldn't remember her last name.
That's good. Okay, good. Then you may get this then. We're going to start, you know, you're competitive. So we're going to start off on a good note today. Mm-hmm. I just reminded you of your first win, but can you remember the name of the player that gave you your first loss? And if you need a hint, I've got one.
I do need a hint.
Okay, good. You both have played a Wimbledon final.
Oh, God. Who did I play in South Lake, Texas? Wait. Oh, my goodness. 2008. How do I not remember this?
I know. I know. This is fun. This is great.
Jeannie Bouchard.
Jeannie Bouchard.
Yes, of course. Yes. And then I think the funny thing is I played her in a junior tournament like the next week again.
Did you really?
And I think she killed me there. Was it like 0-1 or
That's
something?
That's so funny. Yes.
Okay. And then the next week I played better. It was like 3-3, but I still lost.
That's so funny. I love that. I will say I love seeing that. You know, who's going to guess in a third round of a qualifying match at a 10K in South Lake, Texas, you're going to have future top 10 players playing that have Wimbledon trophies in their houses. I mean, that is the power of tennis. If you love tennis, go and support the ITF. You know, go download the schedule right now. If you're close to any city that has an ITF event, I highly recommend you go out and watch. This is the future, right? This is evident today. You have Melikar versus Bouchard back in 2008. I mean, I'd pay to watch that match today. That'd be awesome. Well, people do. So there you go. They're still on tour today. Nicole, there's a lot of interesting things about your career we'll talk about today, but one of them is the fact that you didn't really play a lot of ITF junior events, you know, that wasn't, and traditionally you see a lot of players that really spend a lot of time and they shoot their shot at senior events by playing, you know, these junior events. And for you, that wasn't really the case. What was your transition like for you starting out playing pro events?
Yeah, well, the thing is at pro events, at least you made a little bit of money, even though you lost early or something. And at the junior events, maybe because you're still playing against juniors, you would win more matches, but you're not getting any sort of compensation. And I just couldn't afford to go to these tournaments. So I was taking the harder route, but trying to back myself that, you know, if I do well, then at least I'm getting a pro ranking and getting some sort of, you know, monetary compensation and stuff.
Yep.
So yeah, that was the route I chose to go. And well, not really chose, kind of almost forced into it. Because if you can't afford to go to the ITF junior tournaments, then how are you supposed to play?
So is that what it was? It was more, you know, growing up, I don't know what your financial situation was as a kid, but we all play tennis who are listening to the show right now. And we know that tennis can be expensive, right? The equipment is expensive. Mm-hmm. The tournaments, it costs money to travel. And at that point, you're young, you're traveling. No one's giving you wild cards right away. You know, this is something you're all financing on, you know, whoever's helping you, your family or whoever's really kind of a part of your camp at that point. So yeah, that makes sense. You know, it's super tough. Mm-hmm. It's tough. In my eyes though, I do want to say, I think you're the epitome of what hard work can do in pro tennis because you dedicated yourself to the sport and you continue to play events in a ton of small cities, whether you're doing this financially on your own or someone's helping you, but you're traveling all around the world. You're in Tunisia, you're in Puerto Rico, Turkey, all these tiny towns across the US we've talked about in Sumter, South Carolina, or South Lake, Texas. And in 2012, the work started to pay off as you'd win your first of 9 total ITF events that you've won.
Mm-hmm.
You'd win your first of 2 ITF singles events at a tournament in Turkey, which I'm sure that final in Turkey was much different than your Wimbledon final, probably at looking back now. Do you remember that match at all in Turkey, that first win?
I do, yeah. I was playing a Turkish girl, actually, in the final.
Oh, well, you know, the 8 people that were there were probably not cheering for you.
And the thing was, there were tournaments back to back to back to back. So even though our final was going on, the qualifying of the following week were on all the other courts. So it's not like we were the center of attention. It was just, you know, all the courts are full and we just happened to be on, you know, the most popular one there, but there was no stadium or anything. And I actually remember after the match, I wanted to take a photo with her, you know, for a memory, just like, you know, us staying next to each other, each holding a trophy. And she told me no. And I was like, I don't know if she was mad that she lost or, you know, but she was like, no, we won't, like, I want to take a photo. And I was like, okay. And so I have a photo of the trophy, but not with her or anything. I don't think it was personal towards me. I think she was just upset that she lost.
You know, I'm grouchy after losses. I get it. How do you process losses after matches? Can I talk to you? Can your husband have a conversation or do you need some alone time after matches?
It depends on the match. Sometimes I'll be, you know, really hot-headed. And then sometimes I'm pretty cool and level-headed and can really just think clearly and, you know, speak about it without bringing up all the emotions. But
yeah,
usually I'm more upset and I need a little bit of time to process, to at least look at it from a logical point of view, rather than just being annoyed with, you know, this point or that point or that shot or that call or whatever.
Makes total sense. I do wonder, in doubles, it's so different because maybe you're dealing with other people's emotions too, right afterwards. Mm-hmm. Is that something you have to agree upon maybe at the start of a partnership? Like, hey, this is how I process. Like, I can't dissect the match like right away. I need a few minutes and we can kind of talk about it if we need to. But does that come up ever? Is that something?
I think you just like learn, you know. I think Ellen and I, for the most part, we can talk about the matches like right after or pretty close. And it's happened a couple times where it's like, you know what, let's talk about it later and, you know, go get some food or something.
Yeah.
I think that's just sort of a learn as you go type thing. Yeah.
We're going to talk a lot today about the success on the doubles court for you. But a singles title, regardless of what kind of event it is a testament that you can play singles. You definitely can.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, few people may not even know this, but you have career wins over Jessica Pegula, Alicia Parks, Carolina Muchova. There's so many great players that you've beaten in your time on a singles court. And you've played a lot of the top players in singles as well. You played Ostapenko, you've played Naomi Osaka and Ons Jabeur.
Mm-hmm.
But few people probably know that you had a pretty bad case of mono, which I'm sure affected your endurance as well. And I'm sure that doesn't help when you're playing 3-hour singles matches at all.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, though, do you consider yourself a double specialist, or is that a taboo term on tour?
I mean, I'm definitely a double specialist. Okay. Singles and doubles are just very different. I still can play singles. I have the ability, but I don't practice it much anymore. So if I do go and play a singles match, I do want to have at least practiced it a little bit before. But I mean, I'm
call Jane up. You say, Jane, come on over. I'm going to beat your ass. And
exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
I like to play singles, and now it's maybe just a couple times a year if I sign in and I get in, but I do enjoy, you know, getting out there and, you know, trying to run around the court and see how well I can do. But at the end of the day, it's not my career path anymore. And sometimes I wonder I did have mono, and then, you know, my doubles ranking was going higher because I didn't have the right endurance for singles at that time. And then my doubles ranking was getting higher. I could get into WTA events and then not in singles. And it was just getting very tough. And then I started making more money in doubles.
Yeah.
So I sort of made the choice to like pursue more doubles and singles. But I do wonder sometimes, had I, you know, stuck with singles a bit longer, how high would I have gotten? Would I have been, you know, top 200? Could I have broken the top 100? Could I have been a top 50 player? I don't know. Because I feel if I, you know, break down my game, you know, my serve and my ground strokes and my court awareness and stuff, I feel like I have a lot of good tools. It's just a matter of if you can put it together, but also if you can stay healthy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't have regrets, I think, because my doubles career has been great. But I do wonder sometimes, but not in a negative way.
Well, no doubt you could do well in singles. I mean, that's not a question. And when a top player like you starts skipping those big juicy payday tournaments to go play singles events at smaller events to get that ranking up, it's a big sacrifice. And it doesn't make a lot of financial sense to a lot of people. And people listening that love tennis, they understand what you're saying right now, because your ranking is in the top 10. If you wanted to play singles, you'd have to go start at smaller events and you'd have to skip some of these big tournaments. You wouldn't be in Indian Wells right now if you were focusing on a singles career. So sometimes that doesn't make a ton of sense for people. There was an announcement that the CVC Capital Partners would be investing in upwards of $150 million to the WTA in a deal that's designed to really help beef and grow the popularity of women's tennis. And of course, the prize money too, right? That could help in a case like you, that you could maybe go play, you know, some tournaments and not feel that financial burden. Can I ask, if they gave you, Nicole, some of this money, welcome, I'm giving you millions of dollars right now. Hello. And I want you to help the popularity of doubles. What would you want to see done with this money that could really grow the art of doubles? I mean, is there something? I know there's not a magic answer, but I guess.
I do think there is a magic answer, actually. People love to watch people that they know. So when Federer and Nadal are on a doubles court, they're going to be on center court. People are going to come and watch them because it's Federer and Nadal. And if they invest money into actually the media, you know, interviewing us and showing our matches and putting them on stadium court and making us superstars, then people are going to know who we are. And then they're going to want to watch us.
Yeah.
You know, if my first round match is on center court every week, and then, you know, you go second round, quarter, semis, I mean, people love to follow people that they know. If they don't know you, they might see you play a good match and like, oh, that's good tennis. But then if they never see you again, how is that going to be promoted? Turn us into superstars.
Yeah.
I mean, put us all over social media, or at least start with a few doubles teams, you know?
Yeah.
Start with maybe the top eight of both the men and the women and really hone down and like get them out there, get people to know them. And then here, Indian Wells is the perfect example. Every single court is packed. So my match on Stadium 6 was packed. Why not put me on Stadium 2 and then put more people in there? And then people will know, finally learn who I am, and then they'll actually request it.
Preach, Nicole Malachar Martinez. That is exactly right. You know, and that's why, I mean, I'll digress for one second, but that's why I love to do a show like this, because I love to spotlight players like you. And I think everyone, if you're listening out there, I know you're listening out there. Everyone listening out there, please go follow Nicole, follow Ellen, follow these great players that maybe aren't playing on that center court all the time, but you know, that's how things change. So yes, let's do that. I'm 100% in your favor. I agree.
And then the second thing I would say, make it easy.
Oh, two things. You're being greedy now. I love it. I only gave you like 50 million. Now I get to give you 100 million. Okay, keep going.
I make just one platform where to find all the live stream matches.
Nice.
Make it easy for people to actually be able to follow. Don't make it ESPN Plus for one and then Tennis Channel for another and then Hulu for another and Amazon for another. People can't follow. It's too complicated. Make one, commit to one, and that's where you can watch you know, all the courts of any tournament, and that's it.
That's tough. That takes a lot more than what they're going to invest. You know, we're talking media. We're talking, you know, that's a lot. I mean, because you're absolutely right. I mean, Australian Open was, for anybody, again, you're all listening to this, Australian Open is ESPN Plus, and you're trying to find a Nicole Melichar Martinez match, and you have to like get the app, and then you're checking on Tennis Channel, and it's not, you know, you're absolutely right. Yeah, it's frustrating. Let's do this. Nicole Melichar Martinez for WTA president. Let's do this. CVC partners, you know, she's coming for you. She wants your money. She's going to figure this out. It's been a hot topic, money. Anyway, we had Denis Shapovalov come and speak out on gender, the gender gap recently too. I mean, of course, Venus and Billie Jean have been speaking about this for years. I mean, it's on the minds. It's on the lips. We got to keep talking about it. So thank you. I love your perspective. There we go. All right, Nicole, we're going to skip ahead a couple years because in 2015, you'd make the first of 28 career WTA doubles finals. 28?
Wow.
Really?
I didn't know that.
That's a lot. That's really a lot. You continue to climb the world rankings and you'd actually make three finals that year in 2015, but you'd have to wait just a little bit longer for that feeling of winning your first WTA title. And that would come on the clay in 2017 at an event in Nuremberg with now retired player Anna Smith. That partnership with Anna was pretty successful. I think it was only like the third time you played together when you won that tournament. So that was pretty kind of fun. What do you remember about that title run in Germany with Anna, your first WTA title?
Oh my God. It was a crazy week. A lot of things fell into place. I don't know. We were playing in Trnava in Slovakia the week before, and we lost, I think, in the quarters to Heather Watson and I think a British pair. And I was so upset because I thought we should win that match, but it gave me one day to go to the Czech Republic, to go to Brno, because my grandpa wasn't doing well. And I got to see him. And he had always told me I need to win a tournament before he dies. Well, because we lost, I had the one day to go to Brno. And then we went to Nuremberg. And he actually died on the day we were supposed to play our semifinal match. Oh,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So my dad was debating if he should go back to the Czech Republic or stay there with me, because my dad was, it was my dad's dad. And we ended up getting a walkover that day. And I also had like hurt my elbow. I couldn't even like hit a serve. I had aggravated the nerve in my elbow. And so finals day, I'm like, I don't even know if I'll be able to play. And I go to the physio and she does like four different tape jobs on my elbow. And then somehow like I go warm up and I get warm and I'm like, oh, you know, it's all right. And after, I think we can't remember if we won the first set or lost the first set. Now that's all a blur. But after the first set, Anna had hurt her back. Her back like stiffened up on her and went totally, it just totally blocked her. And the physio was already very frustrated that week that everyone was calling court calls and just like absolutely no court calls for the final. Well, Anna has to call her to court and she goes off court for tape and she cannot move. And I think just the zero expectations and I don't know, it all fell into place and we saved match point and then we ended up winning the tournament. And I guess I was 2 days late for winning my first title for my grandpa, but I think he brought me some luck. And I was actually really grateful that then hindsight 2020 that we lost the week before, that I could still see him one more time before going to Nuremberg, because had we won one more match, I would have gone straight to the next tournament and not seen him. So everything bad is good for something, as they always say. And I think that first title will always be a special place in my heart, especially because of him.
Oh, Nicole, I'm choked up. That's amazing. That's, I mean, the fact that he was with you, right, watching and that came to fruition. I mean, that's just, I love hearing that. Thank you for sharing that. I mean,
yeah.
Well, you know, 28, so many titles and so many finals since then. In 2018, it would be a little bit different kind of year for you because you'd start the year playing with a full-time partner that year with Kveta Peshka, the legend, former number one.
Yes.
Doubles, who retired at 46. I love that. I saw her actually in Chicago to win her last title with Andrei Pekovic. And it was I was there the whole week with a friend. And I mean, just such a legend. It was so amazing to see. Do you think you'll play into your 40s? Do you think you're going to play like Kveta?
Absolutely not.
She got that right away. She's like, no, that's the easiest question today. I didn't get a hat in Austin, no cowboy boots at all. And absolutely not. I will not be playing in my 40s.
No, I mean, hat off to Květa. She thought she was going to stop many times and then just kept going. And in the 2 years I played with her, I think I learned the most I've ever learned on a tennis court, just being by her side and understanding, you know, the spaces of the doubles court, how well she sees and understands and how calm she is in stressful moments. And she probably taught me more than any coach could ever teach me, even though her husband at the time was my coach, Torsten, and he taught me almost everything I know about doubles. Even to this day, he's occasionally in my ear with, you know, some of his sayings and stuff, even though now I'm working with my husband, who's also a fantastic coach, and we have a great partnership going. So yeah, I mean, just you always learn something from everyone. And with Květa, it was probably the best thing that could have happened to my career.
I love hearing that. I'm such a big fan of hers as well. For me, 2018 was my favorite year of your career, not just because you won Wimbledon, which we're going to talk about in a second, but you also won your second WTA title in Prague at the Prague Open. And I'm guessing, as someone whose parents are Czech and you speak Czech yourself, and mm-hmm. you probably had a lot of family there watching, mm-hmm. and to win that trophy in Prague, especially after the story you just told about your grandfather and how important your culture is to you, and how obviously you go back and visit as much as you can your family there, I bet that was so cool. What did that title in the Czech Republic mean to you?
Yeah, it was very special. My grandma was there, my aunts and cousins were there, other family friends were there. And yeah, it was just a really great weekend. We had lost in the final the week before in Stuttgart, and we had that bitter taste from, you know, being so close and not winning the week before. And so the title in Prague was just was really nice. And, you know, the bottles of champagne were popping, and yeah, just the fact that family can be there and share those moments with your family, it's just, there's no better feeling.
Nicole, you've given a lot of credit to Květa Peschka's coach, Torsten. You just mentioned him in 2018. You started working with him. It all came together because you marched into Wimbledon. And let's talk about Wimbledon, because it's just an iconic couple weeks for you. But before we go into those 2 weeks, are you ready for your second quiz question today? Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
You already want to know, so that's good. We got this. Mm-hmm. This one is kind of hard, though. So
okay.
I designed it.
Bring it.
Yeah, I didn't want you to, you know, kind of how you steamroll me today, you know? Mm-hmm. So we gotta make it interesting for the third question. Mm-hmm. So regardless, this is a testament, this question, of how hard you worked to win that mixed title. So here's your question. Nicole, how many former number ones in single, I know you're, I made it hard on purpose. It's okay. If you get it right, I'm shocked. And I think it's tough. Nicole, how many former number ones in singles or doubles did you beat to win the 2018 Wimbledon mixed doubles title?
Okay, so Azarenka is one.
One.
Jamie Murray is two.
Two.
Andrea Hlavačková, three.
Okay.
Wait, no, she wasn't number one. Okay.
Did I give you?
She wasn't number
one. My face
one.
Is like, it's okay. She got to three.
Huh?
She got to three.
She got to,
she got
three.
To number three.
Okay.
World. Okay.
And then she played with Roger Vasselin, who was not number one.
Okay.
In the semis, we played Katerina Srebotnik. That's another one.
There you go. You're up to three.
And I'm just gonna.
Are we good? Are we good there? Or we want to keep going?
We might be good there. We did get a walkover from Bruno Suarez, and was he playing with Mirza that year?
No,
he wasn't playing with Mirza. Well, I didn't actually get to play against them because it was a walkover, so I didn't.
It counts.
That doesn't
it counts.
Count.
It counts.
Makarova. It was Makarova. There we go.
Yes.
And I think I want to say that's it.
Are you good there?
My first round. Yes. Four.
Did Suarez get to number one?
No, he did not.
He didn't? Are you sure?
No.
Well done,
yes.
Nicole. That's right. You're at four. Okay, you win. I feel like I led you. I feel like we could have gone down the Hlavačková path, but you know what? It's good. I think this is a good, we're a good team. I feel like you're good. You play your side. I play my side. I helped you out. I feel like good memory for you. That's really good.
There we go.
All right, we're going to talk about Wimbledon because you go into 2018 with a steady partner and a traveling coach, mm-hmm. and bam, mm-hmm. you get to two Grand Slam finals. I mean, you get to the women's doubles final and the mixed final. How amazing. The year before, you're playing 15Ks with your sister Jane, and then the next year you're in the Wimbledon final. It's amazing. A friend of the pod, Jonah Sobel, wrote in to ask, what memory or story sticks out in your mind the most those two historic weeks at Wimbledon?
Well, I was actually terrified I wasn't able to play because I had picked up my bag wrong and I had hurt my wrist. Like, so we lost in Eastbourne first round the week before. We played horrible. We played awful. And I was on my way to practice and I picked my bag up and like somehow like my thumb or my wrist or I don't know. And I couldn't hit a ball and I was panicked and I almost took a whole week off.
Ooh.
And I had like the wrist brace on and everything. And I was like, you know, do I even sign in for mixed? Do I not? And wow. I kind of went into Wimbledon with zero expectations. But then again, the physios had like a fantastic tape job. And after, you know, the few days off, it settled. And I don't know. And I had never won a match in doubles. I had in mixed, but never in doubles leading up to that event. And it's just, you kind of just take it one day at a time and you get your first win and then your second one. And then you start feeling the grass and the court and enjoying the moment. And then it kind of just, the 2 weeks went by so fast. It was incredible.
I mean, you had some tough matches. You had a 9-7 in the third match against Slavatchkova and Roger Vaseline. I mean, so many great matches. How significant is a win like that for you mentally, even today? Are those 2 weeks something that comes back in your mind when you're down on yourself? Or is that something that motivates you, or do you find motivation in other things?
I mean, I remember, I think it was at 5-all in that third set, they had 2 break points on me.
Yeah.
And we played 2 really good points. And I have the matches saved in my computer. And then whenever I want a feel good, I'll either watch, you know, that match against Andrea and Eddie, or watch the Wimbledon final, because I played really well those couple of weeks. And, you know, it's nice to watch when you're playing well.
I love. Yeah, we all need that moment. Where do you keep your trophies?
I have some at home and then some at my parents' as well.
OK,
so yeah, at home we have like this wooden like shelf thing that I put my trophies on.
I've heard you say your goal is to win a doubles grand slam. Do you feel like Wimbledon is your best shot, or you've made the semis of all of them at this point? I mean, do you feel like you have a better shot at one of them versus other, or does it really depend on your partner and their service?
I think Wimbledon could be, but I feel like it's a fair chance at any of the 4, just because I think the full scoring makes a difference. And with an aggressive game style, I mean, US Open's fast, Aussie Open is fast, even French Open, if it's sunny, it's fast, Wimbledon is fast. So like, I like my chances at any, and I think, again, you need to win 6 matches. You need to be healthy. You need to figure out, you know, like you can play well, or your partner, or, you know, one of you to like pick the other one up. There's so many variables that play in. I don't rule any of them as a heavy favorite, but I think I could do it at any.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, the stars have to align. You're absolutely right. I mean, everybody's so great nowadays. It's just, it depends on the draw. It depends on the fitness. It depends on, you know, what you ate that night, I guess, right? I don't know. So many things. Well, after a very successful 2018 season, you play with some great doubles partners. You'd win titles with Yufan Xu, Demi Schurz, Dasha Seville. Shout out to Dasha, who's back on her feet again after, you know, crazy, crazy ACL stuff. So Dasha, if you're listening, thumbs up to you. And your current partner, another Aussie, Ellen Perez. Your fan on Instagram, Stephanie_Wu, they want to know about the circle of life with doubles partners on tour. They ask, how do you choose your doubles partners, and what is the most common reason partners stop playing together?
I think you choose your doubles partners just based on playing style. You know, we all have practiced with each other before, played against each other. Availability is a big factor, but you know, I think you ask them and, you know, they say yes. And then it's sort of like dating. You try and play a match together, a few matches, and if it goes well, you continue. And if it doesn't, you talk about it, maybe part ways.
Yeah.
But I think the personalities also need to gel pretty well together. I know some teams that have maybe, you know, they played well together, but personality wise, they didn't get along so well, and that drove them nuts. So I think it's, there are many factors in why you can break up, or maybe just, you know, the life cycle of it. You play with someone for 2 years and then you want to play with someone else. And I think on the tour, that's kind of normal. And yeah,
it's okay. It's like no hard feelings. Is there hard feelings, or is there no hard feelings? I mean, you guys swap so much, it seems like. I mean, it honestly, if you see the checks break up, you're going to be like, oh, wait, that's kind of weird. Right. But, you know, I think for most part, if you're not playing together since juniors, I mean, there's an expectation that, yeah, maybe it's a 2-year life cycle. Maybe it's a, you know, we play together at big tournaments or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like most teams that split, it's usually on good terms and, you know, they just decide to go different ways. I don't think they're, it's not really like breakups and dating.
Yeah. A fan on Twitter, GPiphany33, has a question about your run to the 2020 US Open doubles final. They ask, The 2020 US Open was a strange one in the middle of the pandemic and had no fans. Mm-hmm. What do you remember the most from those strange and silent 2 weeks of tennis history? And before you answer, I will say, because that was, I mean, we all remember now where we were at that point during the pandemic. But 3 weeks after that US Open final, you get to the French Open semifinals playing with Iga Świątek too in 2020. And I love that pairing, by the way. What a crazy month, because you actually, and I know, go back to the US Open too, because I want you to answer that. But, you know, you're playing the French. You also won the lead up in Strasbourg. You won that tournament with, I think, Demi Schuurs, right? And then you have played with Iga, you played with Demi, you played with Yufan. I mean, there's so many. With that month, you played with three different partners and you were successful at all of them. All right. With that, go back. What do we think of that US Open, that pandemic, that weird one?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it was strange just because there were no fans, but there was something that was kind of calming about it because it felt like you were practicing a little bit. You know, you're in the moment trying to win, but at the same time, whenever I'm practicing and playing points, I'm trying to win also. And it was just, you know, you had the communication with your partner and with your coach and there were no other distractions. And I know some players really feed off the crowd, whereas I can feed off a crowd, but I don't feel I have to. So for me, it's not necessarily an advantage or a disadvantage. It's just sort of neutral. And I mean, no one liked all the COVID restrictions and stuff, but
yeah.
I didn't mind it. It didn't bother me to play in silence. It was fine.
Your fan on Instagram, WTA Chat, asks, of the three semifinals in Grand Slams that you've played and didn't win, there's the 2020 French with Iga, 2021 Australian with Demi, and 2022 US Open with Ellen. Which do you wish you had a second crack at?
The French Open one with Iga.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a dumb.
Yeah, I felt we definitely had our chances to win that one. And that one probably hurts the most.
Yeah. Well, you know, well, maybe we get a second crack. Who knows?
You never know.
Nicole, come on. Who knows? Do you have a non-Grand Slam match that you wish you could redo? If we're talking about that 2020 Iga, that's a great match too. I mean, go back and watch that one on YouTube. That was a great semifinal. But is there any match, singles or doubles, in your entire playing history that you said, ugh, I want to redo that one. That one is the most frustrating loss I've ever had.
I'm not sure, but maybe last summer we played both the Toronto and Cincinnati finals and both matches were very close. I wouldn't mind redoing those because I think had we done a couple things differently, we could have come out on the winning end. So probably one of the finals.
We'll go there. All right. This is going to be your last Mela quiz question of the day, and I'm going to make it worth triple points because you've already won the game. So why not? Right. So if you get it wrong, then you lose. So the pressure is here, right? Okay.
Got it.
All right, here we go. Your partnership with Ellen that we just talked about has been a success, especially your 2022 summer where you made the Canadian Open final, the Cincinnati final. You were the Cleveland champions. You'd make the US Open semifinal, then a Tokyo final. It was this unbelievable summer of tennis for you both. So I wonder, doubles today has some great partnerships and you and Ellen have battled the best teams in the world. So many great teams. As a team, you've played three teams more than any other team since your existence. You've played the Czechs. You've played, you know, Siniakova and Krejcikova. You've played Chan and Oyama, the same amount. And then this team is the third team that you've played the most. Which team is that?
So three times. Oh, geez, I'm going to get this wrong. Who have we played three times?
Who have you stared across the net the most and you're just like, oh, there she is again. I know one of these players and she's extraordinarily nice. There's your hint. I've given you so many hints today.
Oh my goodness. It's not Kichanok Ostapenko because we only played him twice.
You thought Ostapenko was the player that I thought was super nice?
Yes, exactly.
Hey, I do love, I'm a Penko fan, but I'm just saying, I think that's kind of funny. All right. Anything pops in your head? It's worth triple points. Don't lose today after such a great
I'm not going to lose. Hang on. And it's a team. It's not just one player.
It's a team.
You played another?
Yeah. I don't know if they're a team anymore.
Oh my goodness. I'm blanking.
So nice. Where do nice people come from? Not America.
What is it? Was it Haddad Maia and Danielina? No, we've only played them twice.
I'm going to give you one more. I feel like everyone listening is like, no, she lost. Don't give her another shot. But where else do nice people come from? Like maybe, I don't know, there's great maple syrup there. There's great, so many great tournaments that you go to.
Oh, Dabrowski and Almost.
Yes, you almost got it right. No, yes, it is. It is Dabrowski Almost. I mean, I love Gabby Dabrowski. She's done the show. She's amazing. She's so cool. All right. I'm going to give it to you. You win. Congratulations. You've won today. You did get. We're wrapping up today with Nicole Melikar-Martinez. Nicole, we're finishing up today. We have five really quick questions. It's a game we call WTA Bio. It's rapid fire questions. I'm going to give you one question at a time. You just tell me the first thing that pops in your mind. Okay. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. We're finishing up today with Nicole. All right, Nicole, Melikar is the correct pronunciation of your last name. But what's the worst you've ever heard someone mispronounce your name?
Melcher.
Melcher. That, yeah. Melichar. That's probably
it. Melichar. Like it makes sense. But Melcher, I'm just like, really?
Yeah. I'm like probably another American. So then what's your favorite memory from playing in the Olympics?
Ooh, just being around all the other athletes in the village. I think that was awesome.
Yeah. The energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the last tennis player you texted?
Probably Ellen.
Yeah. Okay. Besides Ellen, anybody else? No.
Laura Sigmund asked me for tickets this morning.
So great. I love it. Oh my gosh. All right. Number four, you're not just a great doubles player, but you're also a great coach as you helped Madison Brengel famously defeat Serena Williams at a tournament in Auckland, New Zealand
mm-hmm.
back in 2017. Did Maddie buy you dinner for the coaching advice on that changeover?
Of course she did.
It was historic. I love it. Go YouTube that moment. That is like you have Nicole and Madison Brengel sitting as they discuss strategy against Serena Williams. It is a funny YouTube clip you have to go watch. All right, our last question of the day. In the history of tennis, Nicole, which doubles team do you wish you could have played against?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I've played against Martina. I never played against Boosie.
Oh.
I never played against Bethany and Lucy. I never played against Lucy at all.
Iconic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, such a great team. I mean, oh, I love. Great answer. Full of great answers today. I had so much fun. This was so fantastic. I can't thank Nicole enough for joining me today. It was so much fun going through your career. I highly recommend you following her journey on social media. You can follow her on Instagram at NMELICHA. Why'd you take the R out? You're almost there. I mean, let's follow her at NMELICHA. Melicha.
It used to be my username for school that they created, and I just kind of went with it. And now if I change it, I think they take away the blue check mark. So
it's true. Don't change it. It's good. We're going to follow her at NMELICHA. Or on Twitter, it's Nicole_Melikar.
Thank you. That was fun.
Thank you so much, Nicole. I had so much fun today. This was so great. While you're on Instagram, shoot me a DM at John Garica. Let me know who you're a big fan of and who you'd like to hear on an upcoming show. And don't forget to follow us at Fantastic Tennis Pod or on Twitter at FanTennisPod. My name is John Garica, and thank you for listening. This has been fantastic.
Bye.
Hey, Fantastic fans, listen up. I was searching online and I typed in fantastic tennis gifts, as one does, and the Google gods shined brightly down on my search as I discovered an online store full of fun, inexpensive gifts that you must go check out right now. www.racketinc.com. That's www.racquetinc.com. They have everything you need for your tennis playing husband, sister, doubles partner, USTA teammate, doorman, you name it. I ended up buying a bunch of the coolest antique racket wine bottle openers. Never seen anything like it. I even picked up a pickleball court mouse pad for my boss because he's convinced he's a pickleball world champion after playing four times, so he'll love it. You won't be sorry. Check out racketinc.com and their Instagram page, Racket Inc., today for the most unique tennis gifts right now.